We'll resume arguments now in Mobile Oil against Higginbotham and others. Mr. Benjamin, you may continue.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, at the recess yesterday, I believe I was attempting to answer a question from Mr. Justice White, and I was seeking to remind the Court of how the maritime law has evolved over the decades by an interrelationship of both non-statutory and statutory law, decisional law augmenting statutory law. The Jones Act and the Death on the High Seas Act and state statutes have all been complementing one another over a period of years. Further, I believe this Court has answered that question in the Godet case, and I read just briefly from footnote 22, and I'm taking it out of context. Nothing in the legislative history of the Act suggests that Congress intended the Act's statutory measure of damages to preempt any additional elements of damage for a maritime wrongful death remedy, which this Court might deem appropriate to effectuate the policies of general maritime law.
But what act is referred to there? The Jones Act or the
Death on the High Seas Act, sir?
Death on the High Seas.
Death on the High Seas Act.
Thank you.
One further point about the exclusivity of the Death on the High Seas Act, and I refer the Court.
Would the Death on the High Seas Act have been applicable in on the fact situation of Godet?
No, Your Honor, it would not.
Then that was dicta that you were just reading, wasn't it?
Yes, it is dicta, and it's not really part of the ratio decidendi of the case, yes, sir. But it is illustrative of what the Court's feeling was concerning the applicability of the general maritime law beyond territorial limits. I did take it out of context. I said I did, sir, to save time.
Think it through again with you, Mr. Benjamin. How could Congress then have been trying to preempt a cause of action that had been decided didn't exist in 1920? I mean, that footnote, as you read it, says that the Congress wasn't trying to preclude some additional damage remedy in the on the high seas. Is that right?
It was not intended by Congress.
Couldn't have been intended by Congress, as there's no cause of action at all in the area covered by the statute, was there?
There was not. There was, Your Honor, before the Harrisburg. Prior to the Harrisburg.
Yeah, but at the time the statute was enacted, the Harrisburg had been decided.
Yes, sir.
So there's no cause of action, so how can the Congress have been deciding anything about damages except what it puts in the statute it's then enacting? I don't quite understand how this footnote even helps you, even reading it the way you do. Maybe I missed something. I don't know. But
well,
it's a very confusing area.
I believe the opinion of the Court was dealing with whether or not there was anything inimical in the interests of the maritime law to complementing the Death on the High Seas Act by non-statutory damages. And that is the context in which I believe this footnote is written. Further, in the language of the Act itself may indicate that the Act is not intended to be exclusive, because Section 764 reveals that with respect to elements of damage recoverable under the Death on the High Seas Act, by express provision, the incorporation of foreign law is permitted to supplement the damages recoverable under the Act, so that if an accident occurred involving a Japanese shipping company, for instance, and the law of Japan permitted the recovery of non-pecuniary losses, a seaman, in those circumstances, his survivors could then augment the pecuniary losses provided for under the Jones Act and Death on the High Seas Act by the law of Japan.
Mr. Benjamin, let me ask another question. Supposing you're right, we rule with you, and then supposing the day after the court decides you're right, Congress repealed the Death on the High Seas Act, would that affect any change in the law? Would there be anything left at all of that statute if we agree with you? Any need for it at all?
To answer your honest question, Mr. Justice Stevens, I believe that the general maritime law concepts would be broad enough to cover most of the provisions under the Act, except for those which have not been defined by jurisprudential development, such as statutes of limitation, beneficiaries, and the like.
But even on statute limitation, if you're right, the statute limitation in the Death on the High Seas Act wouldn't necessarily bar a marine-type action, would it?
No, it would not. In my opinion, the doctrine of latches would apply to a marine-type...
Congress is subservient, then, to this court. Congress can act a statute providing for a specific limitation in admiralty or providing for a specific limitation on damages, and this court can come along and say, we don't care what Congress said, we like it this way.
Your Honor's question addresses itself to the separation of powers called for in the Constitution, and I respectfully attempt to answer that, Mr. Justice Rehnquist, by saying that in the maritime field, the courts have filled the void.
But there isn't any void here. Congress has acted.
But Congress's action doesn't provide an adequate remedy.
Well, but isn't that for Congress rather than this court to say?
Well, as I thought the court answered in the Godet case, there was nothing in the Act which prevented the Act from being augmented by decisions permitting additional elements of damage.
Is that ordinarily the rule with respect to legislatively created cause of action?
Well,
this time?
The legislative created cause of action may please Mr. Chief Justice was intended to create a jurisdiction and a jurisdiction only in the federal court. Now, the measure of damages was held to be adequate, was thought to be adequate by the Congress in both the Death on the High Seas Act and the Jones Act. But the maritime law was a constantly moving body of law. It was a constantly advancing body of law. And today, every state in the Union has wrongful death statutes, and every state in the Union, I withdraw that, and the majority of those wrongful death statutes permit the recovery of non-pecuniary losses. And so it doesn't offend my sense of justice for the court to augment statutory elements of damage by non-statutory elements of damage.
You say this law was both moving and advancing. I take it you mean something more than change by that. What do you mean by advancing?
Well, Mr. Justice Rehnquist, the maritime law has always held a special solicitude for seamen and for those who brave the hazards of the sea, and has always sought to give rather than to withhold a remedy.
Well, then why is it necessary for it to advance at all if it has always been this way?
Because times change, and social concepts change, and the maritime
change. What particular change would you rely on to support your position?
Well, the fact that most of the states, the majority of the states, have provisions in their wrongful death acts which allow the recovery of non-pecuniary losses.
Congress surely must be aware of that.
Well, of course, the Congress has not acted since 1920, and I'm not sure there's been any movement for legislation concerning the Death on the High Seas Act in recent years. There has been with regard to the Jones Act, I'm aware of. I'd like to touch upon another point the petitioner raises. If this court restricts the applicability of the maritime law to territorial waters, the 3-mile limit, it would then return to what is known as a locality test, which was denounced by the court as a test alone, at least for jurisdictional purposes, in the executive jet case. By way of illustration, a widow of a seaman who was fatally injured as a result of a breach of a maritime duty within the 3-mile limit could recover non-pecuniary losses, and the widow of a seaman who was fatally injured on the high seas as a result of a breach of the same maritime duty could not. And this is basically unfair. To illustrate further, your honors are aware of the amount of oil field activity off the coast of Louisiana. Boats and ships are constantly moving from the shoreline to the high seas. It would impose a most onerous burden upon a litigant if he were entitled, or if his survivors were entitled to recover non-pecuniary losses within a 3-mile limit, and the litigants were not positive of where the injury or death occurred. Louisiana's coastline, as your honors know from arguments in other cases involving boundaries, meander, islands appear, disappear, and reappear, and it is quite difficult to ascertain for a litigant where the boundaries are. In addition, the locality test is just in basis an unfair and unrealistic test. Now, I'd like to touch just briefly upon the court's decision in the Barbe case, which petitioner brought out. The Barbe case concerned itself with the survival provisions of the general maritime law. Barbe court recognized the existence, and I use that language because I believe what this court did in Moran was recognize the existence. It restored what was once known as a cause of action for wrongful death under the general maritime law. It didn't create a cause of action. The Barbe court recognized the cause of action under the survival provisions of the general maritime law, using the same reasoning, the same methodology as this court did in Moran and Godet. And it allowed recovery for conscious pain and suffering of the decedent, but denied recovery for funeral expenses. For some reason, which has been categorized as absurd by some, on the basis that funeral expenses would have been incurred at some future date anyway. And, of course, if that logic were carried out, there would be no reason for wrongful death acts because people are bound to reach the terminal stage of life. We think the decision of the Barbe court was completely illogical and would create additional anomalies than those which existed pre-Moran. Finally, I'd like to touch upon the Godet decision. The principal reasons for dissent by some members of the panel of this court in Godet were present in the Godet case and do not exist in this case, or in these cases. In the first place, no suit was brought by the decedent prior to death. Presumably, decedents were killed instantaneously, and there's no problem of res judicata or collateral estoppel. Secondly, there was no possibility of a double recovery, as the court was
Benjamin,
concerned with.
Even though those facts aren't here, if we applied your reasoning, wouldn't the whole concept of Godet apply in the high seas?
It would apply, yeah. Your Honor, yes. And as I said, the recovery for loss of society, although not permitted under the provisions of the Jones Act and Death on the High Seas Act, are permitted by the statutes of most states and are consistent with the advance of the maritime law and its special solicitude.
Have there been any suggestions to Congress that Congress catch the Death on the High Seas Act up to the modern trend?
I didn't hear the last part of your question, sir.
Had there been any suggestions to Congress that Congress amend the Death on the High Seas Act to keep pace with the times, as you would think?
I don't believe there have been, Your Honor.
At least Congress hasn't amended it.
In recent years, it has not amended it. I would like to conclude by reminding the Court that both the Death on the High Seas Act and the Jones Act need not be relegated, as the Fifth Circuit said, and as some of the commentators have said, to the briny deep, nor to the scrap heap, or to the level of non-statutory restatements. They may remain as a basis for recovery for pecuniary losses, and may be augmented by the remedy enunciated by this Court in Moran and Godet for the recovery of non-pecuniary losses with substantial uniformity to the law and substantial justice to the litigants. Thank you, sir.
I suppose you would say that the statute keeps this court from reversing itself and utterly doing away with a cause of action for death on the high seas. That's at least the function of the statute.
No, I wouldn't claim that, Your Honor.
Very well, Mr. Benjamin. Mr. Schumacher, do you have anything further?
Thank you, Your Honor. No. I choose not.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted.